I personally feel the AI situation is about what it's going to be used for. You know, it's I understand it's the future and it's not going anywhere anytime soon, and I'm not anti-AI. I just need someone to show me the positive aspects of this AI thing.
Generative AI offers great power and the great unknown. While being transported into new realms of creativity is awe-inspiring, generative AI is also seen as an ethical minefield. Today, we're talking about the amazing, uncanny, and sometimes eerie world of unreal reality in music, film, and your daily scroll. We're now extremely lucky to be joined by three-time Grammy Award-winning hitmaker, Neo. Neo, welcome.
How you doing, brother?
Hey. Well, look, one of the things that a lot of people might not know about you is that you've got a real passion for science and technology. So please, let's jump into that. I want to know where that comes from.
Well, it all starts with video games. I've been a video game head for a really, really long time. Still am to this day. It's actually my therapy. You know, when I need a break from the music industry, normally you can find me somewhere with my PlayStation just doing that. But it started there, and then it started getting into the art of creating video games and, you know, what it takes to make the video games look the way they look and things of that nature. So it started there and then, you know, blossomed into more interest in the behind the scenes work of just what it is to create some of my favorite video games. And then it goes deeper than that into coding and all of those things. Actually, invested in a coding school not too long ago, just out of sheer passion for the knowledge of it. Yeah. So, that's where it starts.
Well, it sounds like if you're interested in something, you go all in and you seem to take your passions and really turn that into something even greater than yourself. So let's pivot that to talking about AI some. Let's start off with the positive about that. What are you excited about in the space of AI?
I personally feel the AI situation is about what it's going to be used for. You know, it's I understand it's the future and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. And I'm not anti-AI. I just need someone to show me the positive aspects of this AI thing. You know, it kind of, what sparked this whole thing is when somebody showed me an AI program that could not only attempt to write a song in the style of Neo, but then show me another one that attempted to sing the song using my voice. And that didn't fly with me. I'm like, wait a minute. No one sees this as a threat at all. This doesn't strike anybody as weird that there's a whole song here written in my style, sang in my voice, and I had nothing to do with it. That's not weird to anybody else. So, I mean, that's kind of where I sit with it. Again, I'm waiting on someone to bring me the positive aspects of this whole AI thing in regard to music creation and the music industry. Because as of right now, all I can kind of see is the red flags. Now, I'm 100% open to someone showing me the positive aspects of, I just have yet to see any of them.
Quick question then. When you did hear some of the songs that were created using this AI in the form of Neo and the style of Neo, what'd you think? Did it sound good?
It didn't sound bad. No, it wasn't bad at all. The worst part about it is that, again, it was my voice and a style similar to mine. You know, it was a good impersonation, I'll say. It was a very good impersonation, but the reality is, it wasn't me.
Well, then let's stay in this space for a moment, because what you're talking about are really some true ethical considerations that a lot of us have about AI. So let's talk about some of those concerns. You remember Napster, and then iTunes, and then when Spotify came on in and changed the music industry forever. Is it possible that Gen AI is just the next reset?
It's definitely possible. And I think that it would be smart to get ahead of it as opposed to, you know, how it happened with Napster, you know, where it had to be the whole lawsuit thing. And then all of a sudden that becomes the norm. Yeah, it would be smart to get in front of it. But if AI is doing it all for you, what are you doing as the human being? Like, you know, nowadays I got to question every song that comes across the table, because it could be an AI that did it. And it's like, okay, am I working with this songwriter? Am I working with this machine? Again, great impersonations. All day long, yeah. Fantastic. And that's great for, you know, the fun element of it. It's fun to listen to SpongeBob SquarePants sing T.I. song. Yeah, that's fun.
Let's, like, imagine a world where artists can protect or control their likeness while becoming still more efficient. Do you think that there's a possibility you can use AI to write your songs with you, and then you can go on vacation and then maybe, like, come back in and check it and give it some notes and then craft it together?
To be completely honest, to me, all that sounds like is artists getting lazy.
Mm.
It just sounds like an opportunity for an artist to get lazy.
But Neo, when artists first experienced Pro Tools for the first time, do you think that they had a similar reaction? Because
I felt the same way.
You did feel the same way.
I felt the same way about Pro Tools. Again, there are people that spent years learning how to sing on key, and now anybody can sing on key at the push of a button. Again, I'm not against technology. I'm not even against AI. AI is the next wave. It's not going anywhere. I get it. I understand that. I just need to know how I'm supposed to not feel threatened by a machine that's going to come in and try to take away what it is that I do.
So let's take Matrix out of the studio, right? So I'm getting that you're not a huge fan of having AI really assist you in the studio just yet. But let's think about performance, because I know you are also very known for your live performances. You've had different versions of yourself that you've tapped into for multiple albums. There have been multiple eras of Neo. What if you wanted to do sort of like a Neo eras show where it's you and then different versions of you, and we've got those other versions that we're using AI in order to generate?
It could be cool, I guess.
Hold on.
It could be cool for something like that.
Did Neo just crack a little bit on AI?
No, I didn't, because it's still me.
I appreciate just you being genuine and open and honest about AI, you know, and where you are right now in AI. Because here's the thing, I feel like if we do a follow-up interview, like in a year or two, a whole new song might be being sung. You might be right. Well, I'm thankful that we've had the authentic Neo on here today, 100%. It's been a real privilege to talk with you, man. But I also hear that you've got a new tour coming on up. So tell me a little bit about what we can look forward to with that.
Yes, indeed. And it's really me, guys. It's no holograms. It's me out there singing, dancing, sweating, being a whole human, all right? Sharing emotions and passions with other human beings. That's what it is. That's what my tour is. We're in Australia right now. It's the Champagne and Roses tour. We go from Australia to Singapore to Japan to China. We go home for a minute for Christmas and the holidays, and then come the top of the year. Mary just announced it. Myself, Mary J. Blige, and Mario, we're going out again domestic. We'll be in a city near you, and it'll be actually us.
Well, to use one of your own words, it sounds as though the real Neo is irreplaceable.
I like what you did there. I dig that.
All right, so Neo obviously has some legitimate concerns about how AI gets employed moving forward. So let's talk to someone who's actively using it with artists, Ed Ulbrich, Chief Content Officer at Metaphysic.ai. Ed, welcome.
Hey, Albert, how are you?
I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, me too. Glad to be here with you.
So let's start off by talking about your work as Chief Content Officer at Metaphysic.ai. I know that you recently made Eminem a young Slim Shady again at the VMAs. So did you do that just to help millennials like me not feel like we're turning 40?
What I find fascinating is there are artists that are really leaning in early into AI. And you couldn't predict, but Marshall Mathers and his team have been seekers, I would say. They have been early. They have been pioneering. They've been looking. They've been investigating. What I love about this is seeing artists. I am blessed. We'll get to this, but it's such a cool thing right now to be able to sit with great artists. They see our technology through the lens of the creative problems they're trying to solve, in ways we would have never imagined. And so it's just magic to see something. They'll see it differently and find an application for it. What I love about this particular project is it is using AI technology magic really in support of story and narrative and something bigger, right? So it's not just a gimmick. It's sort of a through line, and it's something he's using in the work. And I think it's just brilliant. And I find what he's doing is very personal. And he's using this technology in a way to express himself very personally, which was refreshing and surprising. To me, it's just like, what an honor, right? To see people just harness this and just do amazing things. And it blew up, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, as a viewer, as a fan, you see it and you get chills. So it is eliciting this very emotional reaction.
Absolutely. I mean, couldn't have said it better. That is the power of this, is you stop looking at how it was made. It just is, right? And everything I've done for the 30 years prior, we're struggling to get past that, and hide it. But you know, these are very different tools we use now.
But Ed, I do want to know how it's made though. So how does this technology even work? Like on a practical level, how do you build a generative AI program that can make someone come to life on stage?
Yeah, well, that's a big question that we could probably do a multi-part session on with some people far smarter than me. I would tell you in general, it's data science, right? This is a fundamental shift from everything I've ever known. And to be quite honest, two years ago, I was introduced to a TikTok of deepfake Tom Cruise, right? So that was sort of like, wow. And it was a friend of mine, and I'm coming from, you know, high-end visual effects, you know, from doing, you know, big, you know, Marvel movies and you know, all that stuff. And so we saw that. I was like, whoa, wait, what's that? Right now, at the same time, we'd also seen deepfakes that were kind of, and it's all sketchy. But this just artistically being used in a way to entertain, make people laugh and smile, but it was so well done. It's like, who's doing that? We're trying to figure it out. So that ends up turning into a visual effects supervisor friend of mine who does huge movies, a guy named Kevin Bailey. And he was working with Robert Zemeckis. He's Robert Zemeckis' visual effects supervisor, you know, movie after movie after movie. He saw the potential take from a TikTok all the way to how you could deploy this on a major motion picture. It's here, H-E-R-E, Robert Zemeckis. It's Tom Hanks and Robin Wright. It's a beautiful, amazing film that otherwise likely couldn't have been made.
That's the one where it looks as though the entire movie is shot from the exact same angle through time?
It is. Nothing moves but time, and time is moving constantly around this, and it settles into this this family. And it's just beautiful, and it is such an extraordinary thing because this is a technology wonder. I mean, a technological wonder. It is an unbelievable undertaking, and yet it worked so well. It was really a game changer for me. And so when I that from that TikTok to getting to actually then, because I didn't work at Metaphysic at that time, right? Metaphysic had just started up. They'd done a screen test to get this project. When I saw it, it was extraordinary. I was both mind blown, like, oh my God, that is amazing. And at the same time, just like, oh my God, like that, this is a profound quantum leap for me. It was like, I could take everything I'd ever known with the best people in the world using those tools and deploy them against this. And we could never do that. And then I found out it's rendered and done in real time. As the actor's performing, the AI is, that's being driven in real time live. And that was like, oh my God. And immediately I realized, like, over here, I have horses and buggies and rocks and sticks. And here, these people have thermal nuclear fusion and they're focusing it and they haven't even scratched the surface yet. And so that's, I'm all in.
Ed, you mentioned the term deep fake, though. And I know that can be a very controversial term. So where do you sit on that? And how do you consider the work that you do as related to deep fake?
I hate that term. I do. But I hate it for not, it's words, it's letters. I think it comes from a bad place, right? That word, that made up thing, I think, and therefore it has a bad connotation in the culture. That's not the tool, that's the people, right? Be real clear about that. That same tool or tools like it or methodologies utilizing data science in certain ways, there are people doing extraordinary things, like emotional, moving humanity things using this technology. So it's language. I think it's a moment in this continuum of all things. I could say in a few years from now, we won't be talking about this anymore. There'll be all kinds of brand new stuff to be dealt with.
Right. I mean, because as empowering as this technology is, we can both acknowledge that it doesn't come without pitfalls.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, there are artists who are worried that they'll be impersonated by or replaced by AI. So what are you doing in your work so that artists are building with AI?
Yeah, that's it. Big question. It's a very important question. We're like in the Wild Wild West, right? There's really no, you know, law or order yet. It hasn't all been figured out. And so, you know, oh yes, any technology in the wrong hands can be used for terrible things. People see, like I told you, artists look at what we do and magic happens because they're seeing it through what they're trying to express and look and try to apply it. And from that comes all this magic. But similarly, you know, other people can see things in a different way. It comes down to access, which requires money. There's still a barrier to entry. Not to say that it's not that much money, and some pretty extraordinary things can be done. I would say from our perspective, from my personal perspective also, and what I was drawn to join this company to take on this movie, and now we've done three movies, we've done all this amazing stuff, is one is we've devoted ourselves to, we're helping save the world from boredom. Right, that's our mission. Right, so that's our purpose. This is very much an entertainment endeavor. Currently, we are a technology company that makes tools that we are expressing creatively in entertainment, and doing so quite well. That is a whole lot of fun. At the same time, we're sort of on uncharted territory when we now get to identity and likeness and those types of things. Now, I will also tell you, because this old guy with the white hair been doing this a very long time. So we have been scanning famous actors and celebrities for 25 years, right? We have been creating CG likenesses of them for, you know, that long as well, to varying degrees of success. So these are not new issues. And it's funny because weirdly, what was it, in 2009, I got to do a TED talk after The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, talking about all these same issues, all these, I got the questions at the end from Chris Anderson. So, you know, tell us, what are the ethical implications? It was like, this was what, 15 years ago. And that is interesting. We're having the same conversation now, but there's a point on it. And there was just a big strike, you know, as you'll recall. You know, the entire industry was shut down. One of the foundational issues was AI. And it was also the same for the writers. So it's a thing. Clearly, there's a lot of fear. We had to look at this in a way like we have to behave ethically. That's all you have to do is self-regulate, because there are no, we're in this time. The guy I used to work with at an ad agency a long time ago, named Rashad Tabakawala, and he has this great quote, "The future does not fit in the containers of the past."
Oh, hold on. Let's say that again.
"The future does not fit in the containers of the past." I heard that. It was like bullseye. That, for where I am right now, where we are right now, that just says it all, because we're applying our usual thinking to this new thing, and it doesn't fit. This is brand new stuff. So intellectual property law, identity, property, sovereignty, all these things, like who owns what, how do I protect myself? Like, as it turns out, you don't own a copyright of yourself, right? You don't own yourself, at least your images of yourself. It's a complicated time. So behaving ethically is sort of at the core. And so I meet the founders of Metaphysic, and that's the first thing out of their mouth is ethics first. So, you know, that means you don't go scrape the internet, right? That means that we have to be secure, we have to be confidential. You know, and there's a nice thing in Hollywood, there are standards and rules already that are pretty significant, and for good reason. Half of filmmaking that you see in theaters today, you know, one half of it happens in a camera on a set, the other half is happening in computers all around the planet. So there are very strict security protocols, how things are done, you know, so that exists. There's layers beyond that, but we do believe, you know, people should own and control their data.
Let's dig even deeper into that then with ethics and regulations, because as you're saying, artists have a lot to gain with AI, but there is a need for that protection. You're building this content. So as someone who's doing that, how do you ensure the artist that they're safe to take the leap?
It's consent, right? Yeah. No consent, no AI, right? That's it. We build models. We train with training data. We do data acquisitions, and we so all that needs to be, if we're using existing materials, that has to be licensed and cleared, right? No license, no clearance, like no AI. That's just, you just have to set a standard for yourself, because currently there are not laws that are requiring us to do this, but there will be, there should be, they are coming, we hope, they need to be, because right, of the other people that are using similar technologies and having different ideas and not here to help save the world from boredom and make you smile or think, but other agendas, right? So there needs to be laws, there need to be regulations. In the meantime, we behave accordingly.
Look, I'm just thinking, just off the top of my head, off of the projects that you mentioned, you've had to convince, or your company, your team has had to convince, like Brad Pitt, Tom Hanks, Robin Wright, these A-list stars, to feel comfortable enough to give themselves on over to AI. So just for fun, can you give me an elevator pitch in terms of how do you convince somebody like that they are safe to dive in?
There's a lot of education that needs to happen. I will also tell you, you know, you mentioned Brad Pitt, but, you know, we did Brad Pitt back in 2008-09 when we were making Benjamin Button. And by the way, that wasn't the first time he'd been scanned and done this either. He's done this a lot. Right, so when we work with some of these, you know, Tom Hanks is not new to the scanner, right? I think the issue now is it's the technology, right? Quite honestly, it's not that we couldn't create capture likenesses and have data of them. It was just, you know, if you wanted to do anything, it was damn expensive, right? Because it took a lot of people, you know, in buildings around the world. But, you know, today, you know, it's very different. There's incredibly powerful technology. It's accessible and it's going so fast. And I would say in many cases, it's education is what's missing, right? It's moving so fast that there is no way to educate fast enough. And if people aren't leaning in and trying and paying attention and kind of jumping into it, it's just sailing past them. And so that's what I see. I have a lot of people, you know, you guys are you know, eliminating jobs. It's a revolution. And it's like, well, I've never considered myself a revolutionist. You know, I've heard this. I'm old, right? It's 30 years ago when we started Digital Domain in Venice, California, one of the co-founders, there's James Cameron, Scott Ross, Stan Winston, these are major people in visual effects and entertainment, and obviously James Cameron, my hero, you know, and this company launches, and we are all digital. It was all CGI, right? Well, there was an outrage, right? People were like, you're going to put people, motion control cameramen and model makers and miniatures and pyrotechnics, scenic painters and matte painters, you're going to put us all out of work. And it was like, well, that wasn't the intent, but there's just new tools, right? It's kind of undeniable. And I remember coming into the studio one day, you know, I'm 28 years old, and there's picketers around us. And there wasn't even a labor union striking. It was just people like, you know, in the industry. It was like, that was really like, wow, this is crazy. Like, we're just doing it. To me, it's CGI. But, well, cut to, you know, here we are. That industry, you know, exploded massively after that. After the dawn of CGI in the late 90s, you saw the jobs grow by the thousands. There are now tens and tens. And, you know, we created tens of thousands of jobs coming out of that as a result of that shift in the tech use of technology. It proliferated, and we started to see more things shifting to digital, to the point where half of the movies made in a computer now. I mean, that's just where it's at. So, still very, 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 very expensive. It's very, very, very slow. You know, people don't realize that there's like 1,000 people working on a movie.
Let's talk about the potential. I'm thinking about, you know, young filmmakers out there, young artists, or even as big name artists. Can you talk to us about how AI can be used as a creativity amplifier rather than a shortcut?
Amen. That's it. It's an amplifier. It is that. I say it's like it's jet fuel for creativity. I would say, you know, it's an exciting time. It really, you look at it like this, we've seen disruption. Right, I saw the CGI disruption, and then within that, we saw all these things happening, and humans and game engines and such, you know, boom, it just exploded. And then I see this test for this movie, and it was like, you know, stopped you dead in your tracks for this movie here, right? It's just like everything changes with that. That moment was just like, you know, you can't go back. And then you start to go forward, and you realize that I'm just now learning. So many people are doing so many exciting things. Right. And so I think it's like lean in. I tell a lot of people, like, you know, what do you recommend to visual effects artists today? It's like, look up. Everyone's very busy looking down. Just look up, because few people know what we're doing even. It's like there's so much stuff going on. Like, get into it. The other thing is it's that transfer of skill. Right. And what I'm seeing, and this is so wonderful, it's like people who make visual effects in large visual effects, what they bring is not necessarily, I know how to use this software or that software. That's really not what's important. It's the eye. It's the attention to detail. It's the ability to articulate in language visual things explicitly, right, to someone else, to code something in a way that explicitly results in something that is, you know, very precisely controlled, right? That's what it's about. So those people who are facial animators and modelers and compositors doing traditional visual, they're taking to AI, generative AI, like a duck to water. It is just, it's wonderful to see, because the ones who just are, it's really like, if you're a seeker, if you're passionate and you see this stuff, it's like, oh my God, this just unlocks so much more that I can do. You know, I've seen people that enjoy what they're doing now. I am at a place like I'm having fun again. I have not said that for a very long time, by the way. But it really is extraordinary to see this. And so, look, are things changing? Yes. Will job skills change? Yes. You know, will certain functions and tasks go away? Yes. Will new things emerge? Absolutely. And they're happening every day. We are not even scratching the surface of what this stuff can do, right? Creatively. And that's also what's exciting about it. And other people are making incredibly exciting tools as well. And when you start to see creatives now rise up and start to be able to work across a palette of just powerful things, we are going to start to see some things in the world pretty soon that are going to be extraordinary.
You mentioned scratching the surface. We've only begun to scratch it. But then where should we draw the line? You know, when using generative AI to create digital versions of people, whether they're real or fictional, how do we create the parameters?
But that's a tough thing to talk to an artist about. I don't know. I always try to just go out of the lines, right? I don't know that I think the lines are law and order. I think there is, you know, public decency. There is kind of some moral ethical obligation to not poison people's minds. That's, you know, we're seeing increasingly difficult. I don't know that there. I would look at that in that way. I look at this as, you know, at a certain point, you know, change is the only constant. It's inevitable. We are going through it constantly. It's just happening a lot faster right now. I don't ever think about drawing lines and like, oh, clinging to the past. Like, no, I'm staying here. It's like, no, I'm jumping in. Like, so this is going to go to another place. I think we're going to go, formats are going to change for sure. Distribution channels absolutely will change because they already change anyway constantly. So that's just ever changing distribution. New business models are emerging all over the place. I think the supply chain that creates content in the world right now, I'll call it, say, Hollywood grade content, Madison Avenue advertising grade, you know, quality content, is going to go through a renaissance, but it is going to be very disruptive because it's on, game on right now. And I think you're going to start to see creativity surge. I'm seeing it already.
Well, with that creativity surging, I know the huge creative potential is one thing, but what are the more sinister implications of this, Ed? You know, like impersonating a major celebrity is over here. You know, the deep fake that we talked about before, that's one thing. But thinking about security, government, global business, that's where this can really get scary. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not an expert on this, and I, for my own mental health, try not to doom spiral very often. Sometimes it is very difficult. I'm clearly aware of the power of media and its impacts. I also have, you know, teenagers, I'm the living focus group for some of this. I do think ethical and moral guardrails are important. There's horrible things, right? And it isn't necessarily just for the kind of AI. AI is like science. I mean, it's just a vast spectrum of different things. We're one slice of that. But similar things in that slice, you can take any of these tools and have medical breakthroughs, you know. We've seen that science breakthroughs, research breakthroughs, but at the same time, you know, there's that other world, and that's the super evil version of thing.
But okay, no, we get it. Guardrails. Guardrails are absolutely necessary, very important here. But let's bring it back to the good, which is the space where you really seem to thrive. You're coming at this from a very virtuous space, Ed. So as you're saying, what are you most excited about for this technology going forward? What's AI realism going to be like 5 years from now?
I'm all about directors, production designers, visual effects supervisors, you know, that team, people who make worlds and images and characters and people. So to me, that's super exciting and fun. That always has been. But putting these tools in those hands, that is just mind-blowing. And I am, super fortunate, very lucky guy to be able now to sit with like my heroes, like people that to me are, you know, some of the world's greatest filmmakers, think major people that are seeking this out, that are interested, and to just see what they're doing with it is just like, God, that's incredible. That's what is exciting, and seeing it change so fast, and seeing someone grab it and use it this way, and someone else grab it and use it that way, and us helping enable that. And through that, innovation comes. So there is something incredibly intoxicating about that spirit of innovation. That's where we're at, is it just unlocks the creative, you know, self-blockers, right? And it's fun. It's fun.
What a fantastic conversation this was. We were just so thrilled to have you. So I also want to give you this chance to talk about anything else that you want the people who are listening to go check out. What are you working on?
Well, go see Here. An amazing film, incredible story, moving, powerful, beautifully executed, and proud to have been a part of it. And then, you know, the new stuff I can't tell you about, but stay tuned. Watch this space, ramping. We're in production right now on a colossal, epic undertaking. And, you know, this coming this fall. Watch this space as well, not just in the movie theaters. With Marshall Mathers, we did the first live generative AI on live television on the VMAs. So that's in the world now. That's a thing. And so as we go forward, just keep your eye out. You're going to see some really fun stuff coming this fall, in the film and television and in advertising. You're going to see some very fun stuff as we come into the big media holiday season.
Friends, that's it for today's episode of AI in Action. And I know that you all learned a ton from that one. So please stay tuned here for more. And we'll see you back here again very, very soon.